Culture is sponsored by BetterHelp. I don't know about y'all, but no matter how hard I work, I sometimes still feel like I'm just not doing enough. And life is hectic. There's just simply no doubt about it. Whether you're in school, the early stages of your career, taking a big step romantically, becoming a parent, the list goes on. Each of us has daily stressors that can add up, making it hard to feel like you've ever got time for yourself. And this is when establishing some non-negotiable self-care tactics is more vital than ever. So take the bubble bath, go for a jog, or better yet, pretend to go for a jog and just sit quietly on a park bench for a while. But I gotta tell you, for me, my self-care is therapy. In fact, here at Super Carlin Brothers, we have a no questions asked approval process for time off to take therapy appointments. It's something that we value highly, and we know it makes a difference in the lives of ourselves and our team. For me, therapy has been so vital to juggling my own busy life. While it can sometimes seem frivolous to make time for a hobby when there is so much going on, I've discovered that taking the time actually lifts my mood and makes me more effective everywhere else. And that's something I've learned in therapy. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/poppop today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/poppop.
Hey guys, your one true host, Jazzy J here. Before we started this episode, just wanted to give you a quick disclaimer that after we recorded the episode, our audio file SD card got corrupted, so we didn't have the audio from our nice sound recorder.
Yes, unfortunately. And it was an episode that, like, when we got to the end of, we were really proud of it and really excited about it. I think it's a great episode of the pop, but we just wanted to let you guys know that the audio quality is going to sound a little bit underwater, but I do think it's an episode that is definitely worth a listen.
Yeah, basically we had to use the audio from the camera, but we did really like the way this episode turned out. It's actually episode 250 of the pop, so it's our big, like, yeah, a big milestone episode as well, and it's a Q&A episode, so we're just answering your questions. And not to brag or anything, but Isabel the editor said it almost made her cry.
We also talk about, like, our biggest fight ever, which, yeah, I think is kind of interesting. It's like a big one. We've never touched the topic before, so
we really haven't.
It should be interesting to see how that, like, unfolds for you guys as a listener. But anyway, we just wanted to give you a heads up. We wanted to let you know we understand that the quality won't be up to its normal standard, but we do think it's an episode that you will very much enjoy.
So without any further ado, here we go.
Pop in the morning, everybody. Welcome to Popcorn Culture. As always, I am your one true host, Jazzy J, joined as usual by my brother, the one true co-host, Buzzy Benjamin B. How's it going, Ben?
It's going so swell. It's going so swell. I'm just excited to be doing yet another podcast. You know, we're back in the booth. We're doing the thing. It's going to be a lot of fun. Today's episode, I think, is going to be particularly thrilling because we've got yet another advice column episode up ahead.
We sure do. We've got, like, some 50-odd questions here to choose from the little kernels,
yes,
that Kangaroo Cat has organized on a lovely little spreadsheet right here. So we're just going to be kind of going down the list, picking fun questions and either just answering them per our life experience, or offering advice, which is maybe good or bad. I don't know if you should take it.
I know. That's like whenever it comes to one of these things where it's like you're attempting to give advice, I'm like, there are friends out there who give spectacular advice.
Yeah.
You know, like one of Alice's, like, good best friends, I think, is like one of those people where it's like, if you ask her a question, she responds with nothing but sheer sound quality, thoughtful advice.
Yeah.
And then there's asking me things.
Right.
You know?
And you're just like a train wreck of information.
Just a plumb train wreck of information. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes indeed.
So I remember I had a friend in college who, it was like during a period of when, like, Beth and I were like briefly broken up, and I was just distraught over it. And I would just, like, talk to her, and she'd be like, go home and do this, and then this will happen. I'd be like, I don't know, that sounds insane. And then I would go do it, and, like, exactly what she said would happen. I'd be like, oh my gosh, this is like, what?
can I just keep you on speed dial for my whole life?
Speed dial.
Yes, I need this. But So anyway, we'll do our darndest, or at least you speak from whatever kind of experience that we have, and
we'll do our best.
Hopefully, and or maybe it will be helpful. So,
yeah, hopefully we can help you, or you'll just learn more about us.
Yeah, which is, you know, at least, I mean, we have to assume some version of the reason why you tune in.
Hopefully.
So let's kick off with Scarlet Ravenclaw with question number one, who asks, since you always make fun of Harry Potter for eating baked potatoes, what is your favorite type of potato?
Oh my gosh, I mean, you're asking the people who invented Easter Bunny Pavia Day over here. You know what I'm saying?
True indeed. Our interactions with potatoes are rather significant.
That they are. So let's see. My favorite kind of, I have two anecdotes about potatoes. The first one is that, like, as a kid, I remember, like, you know, at dinner time, mom would put, like, you know, a variety of food on the plates and stuff, and there would always be, like, your regular, like, protein main thing, like chicken nuggets or whatever.
Yep.
And then there'd be, like, the sides that she was, like, putting on there for you to try. And, you know, sometimes I would try them. Sometimes I would have, like, a bite per, like, you know, at least try it rules or whatever. But the very first thing that, like, side item I remember finishing all of, ever, and, like it still stands out to me, was scalloped potatoes.
No way!
Yes, I'm like, that was the food. It was like, I tried a whole thing and I ate a whole thing. And I remember just feeling, like, so proud of myself, however old I was at the time. I'm like, I still remember it.
Okay, so for like, anybody who may not know, that's, like, the thinly sliced potatoes in some type of, like a sauce.
I think they had, like, a cheese sauce on it.
A cheese sauce.
Yeah, so, like, cheesy potatoes.
Cheesy potatoes. I mean, yeah. it's hard to go wrong with those things.
It is hard to go wrong, but, like, to like a little kid who doesn't always eat the side dishes and stuff, that was like my first step towards a wider world of eating.
You know, even that though surprises the pants clean off me.
Does it?
A world, not the scalloped potatoes, that's fine, but the world where you were not eating all of your sides and in general not just being the most agreeable child ever.
Well, probably this was still very young, and, you know, thereafter I tried more things.
No, I mean, this, maybe so,
yeah.
But, like, I can't, I mean, because if anything, I feel like I always felt like I was trying to, like, measure up to your willingness to just, like, consume the whole plate of food in a timely amount of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, meanwhile, I'm over there picking my food around. It takes me to this day, it takes me forever to eat.
It does. Yeah, you're a slow eater.
I'm a slow eater, for sure. So, it comes as a shock to me too that you would remember this particular occasion.
It stood out to me, man. I don't know why, but, like, I do still remember it.
You can't have been more than, like, 3.25 years old.
I mean, we were sitting. It was actually, it wasn't even at the kitchen table. It was sitting in the TV room in the old house, and I was sitting at that little side table that you could attach to the side of this end up furniture.
Dude, yes. Okay, so this end up furniture, in case anybody is also unaware, is the heaviest furniture known to man.
Yeah.
Because it is basically just made from, like, lumber.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, it had this, like, this really thick wooden armrest, and then we had this really great, like TV dinner table that would slot perfectly into it. I mean, you could, like, sit on the end of that thing, and it was just the sturdiest to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Super sturdy. So that's what I was eating at. That's where I was eating my scalloped potatoes, and it was the first side dish I remember fully finishing.
Even that, I have zero recollection of eating anything from that side table other than Cheez-Its and ginger ale.
Sure, yeah.
Which was, like, my after-school
snack. That might also be why it stands out, because we didn't usually eat food there.
No.
Or especially not, like, a meal.
No, right,
like,
yes.
Like, yeah, most meals we're just eating at the dinner table or, you know, dinner breakfast bar or whatever.
Right, yes, yeah.
Yeah,
yep.
That was the table. So, but otherwise, my favorite kind of potatoes are, it's going to be some kind of French fry. For sure.
I mean, hard to compete with French
fries. It's really hard to compete with French fries. They are so good. Presently at lunch, like, we have a burger place nearby, and you can either get sweet potato fries or the regular fries. Presently, I'm on a sweet potato fry kick, so
okay.
I'm going to say right now, sweet potato fries.
Okay. All right. That's a good answer. So, hilariously, as much as we do make fun of Harry for eating his constant baked potatoes, which for the most part we just think is funny because nothing seems less magical than a baked potato.
Oh yeah.
It sort of seems like the most minimal version of cooking available, which is essentially like you are taking the vegetable directly from the ground and applying heat and consuming the finished product.
Right.
So it's like, you know, if we were getting any detail that Harry was eating like a fully loaded
baked potato. Yeah, like if he has like butter and chives and sour cream and bacon on that thing,
right,
even that's a little more magical, but that's never what it says. It's always just Harry was eating his baked potato, which the way it reads to me is that he doesn't even put butter on it.
Right, he just
cracked open that potato.
Well, and you know, the thing that's occurred to me as time has gone on, speaking of like Easter on Poppy Day, because it was sort of our answer, like the Friendsgiving version of like not doing like Friends Thanksgiving, but having that placed in instead of Valentine's Day. But one of the things that I think is really interesting about Thanksgiving Day here in the United States is that you actually cook many dishes and like side dishes. Like there are like multiple ingredients and steps involved in creating each of the concoctions. Whereas like I feel like it is not an uncommon occurrence for Alice and I at home to have our standard protein, but then like oftentimes like if we're having a vegetable, it's just like we will like steam broccoli.
Right.
Or like make green beans or Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. But it's not like you're making a dish. It's almost like the baked potato thing. It's like all of our sides are almost always just things in their common form.
With heat.
With heat and then lightly seasoned.
Right.
You know, sometimes just salt and pepper.
Right.
So there's not like a whole heck of a lot going on there. Which I always think is kind of interesting because it's like you like cook dinner. It's like, well, you're heating ingredients,
yeah.
which is mostly, I feel like, what I do at home. But that being said, hilariously, my answer is probably mom's twice-baked potatoes. You know? And so you mentioned a cheesy potato.
Yeah.
This is effectively a cheesy potato. So you bake a potato, you then cut it inside, you spoon out the innards, which you then kind of create into like a mash, which is then returned back to the potato skin, covered with cheese, placed back in the oven until like the cheese is then like melted into it, and then you serve those around the table, and you basically got like a ready go loaded baked potato.
Yeah,
I love them.
They're really good, and they're usually served at the same time as the ribs.
Yes,
so it's usually just like a really all around great dinner.
I know, forever and ever when we were kids, we were always like, Mom, at some point in your life, you need to just open a restaurant called Mary's Kitchen and just like serve all of the things. And I'm sure plenty of people feel this way about their parents cooking, but you know, I still stand by it. I still think it would work, Mom, in case you're listening.
There you go.
So anyway, favorite potatoes, check.
There you go. Kabam. All right, next one is going to be from Autumn, who says, could you rank different ways of preparing and eating eggs? Kind of the same question, but now eggs.
Kind of in a similar vein. Okay, so let's see if we can at least narrow it into a handful of categories. I think you can easily have fried, scrambled, hard-boiled,
soft-boiled,
poached.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that going to be our five?
That sounds like the main ways you might consume eggs.
We're not missing raw.
Raw. People aren't eating raw eggs.
Well, we can place it last. It's an easy sixth place.
I mean, absolutely. This is, I guess we could, because it says preparing. No, this is preparing and eating. That would require no preparation.
You have to crack an egg.
You have to crack it.
Dude, that's step number one.
There it is.
Crack egg. Step number two, eat it.
Raw is going to be last for me.
Okay, sixth place.
No doubt about that. Let's see. My most common is just scrambled.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
But scrambled to me, despite the fact that it sometimes takes an additional step versus a fried egg, sometimes just seems easier. Because, like, a fried egg has, like, a delicacy to the cook.
There's, like, a certain, like, because you could have, fried eggs can either be, like, sunny side up or over easy, over medium, or, like, you know, biscuit or whatever.
Oh, true. See, now we could almost even have, like, a whole ranking of how would you fry an egg.
Over easy.
I go over medium.
You go over medium. I want the runniness.
I mean, I like runniness.
Yeah.
I think there's still runniness with it. Over hard, I think you've exceeded.
You've gone way too far.
Yeah, now you basically just have a scrambled egg inside of
a scrambled non-scrambled egg.
A scrambled non-scrambled egg.
Exactly.
Like a deconstructed scrambled egg.
Yeah, exactly.
A reconstructed scrambled egg.
Right. Yeah. Not even reconstructed.
Well,
a constructed.
No.
Right, you're not reconstructing it.
Where do?
Because it wasn't broken down.
Okay, so there's deconstructed, reconstructed, or just constructed.
Just constructed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just a struct egg.
An egg that has been non-tampered with.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Over hard. Don't know about that. Let's see. I think even though I don't make it almost ever for myself. I think poached eggs are probably my favorite way. Or it's probably my favorite way to eat eggs.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So now we have, for you, your raw egg in sixth.
Yeah.
Poached egg in first.
Yeah.
You gotta fill in the gaps there.
I think probably under that is like over easy, and then scrambled, and then like soft boiled, hard boiled, raw.
Okay.
There you
go. So you got hard boiled like way at the bottom.
Right? I mean, I don't. Which is to say, I like all of those except the raw ones.
Yeah. Okay.
You could give me any of these, and I'd be down for it. I'd be like, thank you for making this for me. I like eggs.
You know what's really funny? It's reminding me of brother-in-law Mike. Once upon a time, I believe he was applying to go on some type of like. He's a cook or a chef by trade, and so. He was, I think, at one point in time applying to be on, like, one of the reality cooking shows, and he had to make, like, his reel. And I remember in his reel, I was so impressed because he had this, like, big one-cut take where he, like, walked through his house. He did this, like, whole myriad of things. But, like, at the very end, he just goes up to the counter, cracks an egg, and drops it right into his mouth one-handed.
Wow.
And I was like, dang, Mike, that was so good. I was like, he's going to get picked for sure. Like, I mean, going raw egg... cracked on the table straight into the mouth. Like, I mean, that's about as like fierce as it gets.
That was pretty good. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was, I know when I was in college, I had a friend who would, this was like his party trick, was like, he'd eat a raw egg or whatever. Just like, you know, throw one back.
Yeah.
And it was like, he would always like, this was like, it was not just his party trick, but it was also then like, almost like a small con because he would like make bets and that would be like the punishment on his side of it. Like, oh, if I lose, like I'll eat a raw egg or something. But it was like, so he really wasn't betting anything because worst case scenario, he lost. And what would otherwise be a gross punishment for him turned into a party trick.
Then honestly, I mean, it's a well-structured ruse.
It is. It's a well-structured ruse. Yes.
You know, all right. Here's what's interesting to me. As long as we're talking about runified eggs,
yeah.
Is that very high on your list is like runny yolks. And and then very bottom of your list is completely runny yolk.
Well, that's true. I guess I want just some heat.
Some heat. Yeah. So like, I mean, like more than none. But,
more
I mean,
than none.
But you are aware that the yolk inside of the runny egg is like a non-cooked yolk.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So if we maybe microwaved a runny egg so that it was mildly warm, would that make it? That seems worse than
that. That seems worse, yeah. Yeah. Just like warm? I think I'd rather just drink it cold, man. Rocky style.
Rocky style, yeah, that's true. First, that's another one, too.
But it's not entirely uncooked. Like, if you've poached an egg, like, you've cracked it in the water, and it has been in the hot water, like, it's still runny, but, like, heat has been applied to it.
I guess that's true. It's like, you almost need to know the exact cook point of an egg to know, like, how much temperature successfully made it to what is otherwise the runny bits.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can count the runny bits as a cooked egg.
I mean, yeah. There must be a certain amount of, like, heat you can apply to it, though, where it's more cooked than if it was raw.
That's my curiosity. It's like, I can't tell if it's a psychology thing where it's, like, because the rest of it is cooked, you're, like convincing yourself, like, okay, this is fine. But I'm like, if it was cooked, it would be cooked.
But it's like, this feels like the difference between, like, getting like a medium rare steak and like a well done steak, where it's just like, you know, that pink part in the middle that's just not cooked, and it's like, but like it is.
Yeah, but I mean that's a good point.
Yeah.
It's a good comparison. I think it's as close as we're gonna get to being the same thing. But I think like a rare steak in the middle, like if it's rare, I feel like it's not cooked.
Well, I've never ordered a rare steak.
That's fair. Medium rare is my go-to for that one.
Yeah.
As long as we're dissecting all the foods and the various cooks.
Yeah.
One thing I will say that I've fallen in love with is deviled eggs.
Oh.
But there is nothing that worries me more.
Yeah.
Because like
you're right.
The idea of an egg that has been like in this, I don't know what it is about eggs. I feel like it's like the fact you're not supposed to like eat like cookie batter or brownie batter or whatever because it's got the raw eggs in it.
Yeah.
I feel like. That, like, I was going to say propaganda, but that's probably not the right word. That warning label is so effective that it's like, I'm always endlessly concerned. Like, eggs, runny, I eat all the time. I never worry about it. Eggs that have been cooked even more and then handled at all, to me, marks as higher grade suspicion.
And so I think the thing about deviled eggs that makes them suspicious is that they are a food that is normally made in like a party setting, and normally they are like left out at room temperature, And that feels like the wrong temperature for eggs to be at.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. Like, most eggs are almost eaten immediately after cook.
Yeah.
And this is an egg that is intentionally being consumed, like, potentially a couple hours after they were made.
Right. And it makes, because I think you're right, like, all, like, the salmonella fear of, not salmonella, is that what it is?
It could be.
I don't know. All the fear of eating raw eggs that is, yeah, plaster and everything, feels like you're like right back. You're like, okay, well, we cooked them and we put them out. But now that we've put them out, all that fear returns.
Yeah, that's what
it seems like. That said, like, I don't feel like the warnings about eating raw eggs and cookie dough deter almost anybody.
Oh, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like one of those things where most of the time I'm like, Rocky did it. It's fine.
And you're right. Like, I was chugging regular raw eggs.
Right.
Okay, this has been mixed with sugar. It's probably practically cooked.
I see. That's the thing, though. That's exactly it. Like, I think in my mind, I'm rationalizing the runny egg in the same capacity as I'm comfortable eating raw cookie dough.
Right.
Where it's kind of like, it was mixed.
It was mixed.
The friction created by the panel, it must have, it got rid of any type of disease.
Let me go ahead and tell you, eating raw egg in a cookie dough, even if you get sick, it was worth it.
It was worth it.
Because here's the thing, by sick, they mean, like, you're going to have, like, an upset stomach, right? Like, this is the kind of sick often feels like it's associated with death.
How sick
do you think you're going to get?
I know, but
I'm
so glad that we started today's episode by being like, we probably don't give good advice. And here we are, worth it!
Don't, look, I mean, go ahead, lie to everyone else that you don't do it, but you know the truth.
Oh, but you know the truth.
You know the truth. This is why you wanted to make the cookies.
Probably so.
Yeah.
Probably so.
You know?
Yeah. Just the other night, I was actually making brownies, and I was using one of my special silicone spatulas, which are extremely effective at getting all of the batter out, and Alice hates them for that reason. She's like, you could just leave some in the bowl
for me.
On purpose. So I intentionally don't scrape it all out so that she has something left to enjoy.
Yeah.
I think she actually ate more brownie batter pre-cooked than we actually consumed of the brownies post-cook.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're bad about that sometimes. Okay, want to move
Sounds
on to
like good about it.
You know what? We're good about it.
Yeah. You're good about eating more of the batter than the cookies.
Good about the batter.
Yeah.
It almost feels like you're saying batter. B-A-D-D-E-R.
Yeah, good about the bad.
Good about the batter.
All right. Yeah, so you go for the next question.
Oh, next question. Okay,
yeah.
My turn. Okay.
Fire away.
Should I just like try to like really throw you a curveball?
I mean, do whatever you want, man.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Okay. Mary. Could be our mom.
Could be. Oh my God. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
It might not be.
Okay.
But wouldn't it be interesting if mom, who is in fact a patron
of
our show, asked this question? You two are obviously very close, but have there been times when you have really disagreed on something? How do you handle conflict in your relationship?
Oh man, have we really heavily disagreed on something? Like whether you should have your eggs runny or a little less runny.
I almost thought that our relationship was over.
That was it.
On that one. I'm curious. I just bounced past the ball to you.
You just bounced past the ball to me about, like, let's see. There's not, like, many things that we are, like, hardcore on opposite ends of the spectrum about.
We're not, yeah.
No.
There is that. I will say that I think our biggest fight ever took place
in and around Super Carlin Brothers.
Would you, like, while we still live together?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yes. Yeah, I think so. I'm, like, trying to decide how far into the details you want to go with it.
Go for it.
I want to say that to preface it, when I was in college, I was living... two of my roommates' dads had decided to buy a townhouse together, and then their idea was our kids will live there whilst they're in college, and then after college, we'll just continue to rent it as an income property.
Which is, all things being equal, not a bad business model.
I mean, it's like, you know, the demand is 1,000% every single year. There's no chance that place is ever not full of students.
Yes.
Yeah. but we were just the first round of it. And as such, I was one of the roommates as well. And one of the guys whose dad's had it wanted to bring a dog to school. And it was sort of like, sure, okay, cool, that's fine. I like dogs. I've had dogs my whole life.
Yeah, you know, we grew up with dogs.
We grew up with lots of dogs, lots of cats, lots of fish. No big deal. Although, what I don't think I realized was that there's a big difference between having a dog that is yours and having a dog that is someone else's. Also a big difference that having a you know, between like a small dog and a big dog. And also a big difference between having a big dog and having a real big dog.
Yeah. And I would also even include in there that like lots of college students fall in love with the idea of having a pet, and then it can be quite burdensome.
And so such was the case with my roommate, who had a real big dog. Like a bear-sized dog. I mean, huge. Huge at a young age, you know?
Yeah.
So started as puppy, quickly grew to full size, still puppy. You know? You know the kind. Also, tons of just hair everywhere. Wasn't a great living experience with the dog, which, you know, when you're at college, you need, you know, you have to like take dogs for walks or, you know, clean up after them or whatever. And a lot of times, you know, you're not there. So you just ask your roommates to do it. And, I was said roommate a lot of the time. We'd be like, would you mind just taking the dog out for like a walk? And we'd be like, yes, I do mind.
Right.
Like, I don't want to. No, I don't like, no, thank you. So it was a constant and literal enormous burden on my life having the dog in the house. It made it difficult for, like, you know, Beth to come visit because she was allergic to dogs.
Yeah.
It would chew up my stuff, like my money.
My
cash dollars. That was especially frustrating.
Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah. So I didn't love it. Despite being a dog person.
Isn't it? I mean, an actual money pit.
Yeah, literally. There's nothing like losing money on a dog you don't own.
So
anyway, fast forward a few years when Ben and I decided to live together. We just sort of like, because, like, it was just sort of, we agreed ahead of time, like, just no pets. Neither of us had any pets at the time. I was coming off of this bad experience, and, you know, wasn't a huge deal or anything at the moment. And then, at some point, though, our mom started working for the SPCA, and you wanted to, like, foster a dog or whatever for a couple of weeks. And I was like, you know, oh, if we're just, you know, fostering it for a couple of weeks, I guess that's okay. But obviously what happens a lot of time when you're fostering a dog is you want to keep a dog.
Yes.
And this was where the point of tension came in.
Yeah. So that was like, and I mean, to be fair, I do think that there's like, there is a lot of like the post-college fervor, I think, to want to be an adult a little bit, like the idea of getting your own place, of getting, you know, like that first car that like maybe is like in your name versus like, you know, the hand-me-down, or, you know, being in like a first real relationship, or, you know, first real job. Like there's like that first wave that you're experiencing immediately upon leaving college, I think is like a big wave to ride.
Yeah.
You know, and it continues for a good long while because, like, oftentimes, like, you know, you do get that first job, which parlays into your first big promotion. And a lot of times that, like, you know, first long-term relationship you've got turns into an engagement and a marriage. And, you know, that can sometimes mean that, you know, then the child comes along the way. And, like, you know, so for a good long steady period of time upon, like, entering those formative years of your life, you're kind of, like, you know, bouncing from one major life experience.
Yeah, I mean, you're like, and there's a part of you that, like, you know, likes feeling all that independence, and it's exciting to, like, make big independent choices about your life that, you know, and, you know, like, you know, for having, you know, wanting a dog is, like, a very, you know, it's a very natural thing to want, especially if you grew up with pets and stuff like that.
Yes.
You know, it's like, oh, you know, I've always had pets, but I've never had the pet.
Right.
I've just been part of the family that had the pet.
Yes.
Yes. So this is there you go. So anyway, we fostered the dog and you wanted to keep the dog and I was like, we agree, no dogs.
Yeah. So I think that was like one of the dicier moments because I think in the moment, like I was rather steadfast. Like I had, you know, like I was like, I fell in love with the dog during the foster experience. And I was like, surely Jay will too. Like, you know, this'll be fine. This'll end up working out. Like, you know, it will be okay.
Right.
And then I think as the divide happened, certainly is also when it was kind of like, and this is still early Super Carlin Brothers, mind you, as well. So it was kind of like, this wasn't a career for us yet. We had no idea what was on the massive horizon,
right,
you know, off in the distance or anything. Yeah. And so, you know, at this point in time, it was kind of like,
it's just like a big chore a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Chore is maybe not the right word, but It was an investment.
It was an investment. In time. And I think it was important to point out that, like, even doing YouTube, like, I think I've definitely, like, you know, spoken on a fair bit in the past, it wasn't something that I was thrilled about. Like,
right.
It wasn't something that I had sought out. I didn't really know how to, like, be energetic about it. And so I think going back to, like, 23, 24-year-old me, it kind of felt like that was, like, the situation. So there was a point where it was kind of like the whole world of Super Carlin Brothers felt like it was sitting on the shoulders of this like 14-week-old puppy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, what is going to happen here? And so, I mean, I know that like we're obviously tiptoeing around this conversation a little bit, I think.
Sure.
But I think it's also worth pointing out that this is about the peak of me and you arguing about anything ever.
Yeah, yes, you're right.
So, like, I think it's, like, it's uncomfy to talk about, but it's also, like, if this is the worst we had, that's not so bad.
It's not so bad. I don't know.
And so, that was sort of, like, the moment. But I also remember, like, you know, there was I remember the moment we were, like, both sitting in the basement across from each other from our two different sets. We were having a big conversation about the thing. And we did end up, like, hugging each other and crying and, you know, reconciling.
Yes,
and
we did.
Everything ended up being fine, and we obviously persevered, and ultimately it ended up being the best decision ever, because if we had stopped, none of the rest of this would have happened.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So, that was a dicey time too, and it was, I mean, I don't know. Like, I look back and I feel bad about how I handled it and stuff, and because, you know, I think as much as you know, like you were saying, like you want to make like these independent decisions for yourself. I felt like I was kind of doing the same thing. Like,
yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Like
for sure.
I've learned from experience here, and this is, you know, what I learned, and I'm trying to apply it. And,
which to be fair, I think in any like sound, like therapy room is the kind of boundaries that they are trying to teach you.
Right.
Like, you know, it's not falling victim to like the repetitive behavior of falling, like, you know, into a situation where it's like, I did this before, I told myself I wouldn't do it again, I did it again, now I'm walking my roommate's dog.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. It was a tricky situation, for sure, and we got through it.
We did get through it. We did get through it. And, I mean, it was just a good building block, I think, for the rest of everything else. Like, it's not uncommon, I think, even for us here at work, even this very week, I feel like we've had one of those occasions. We will come in, and I don't even think, like, I think me and you are always so invested in the well-being of the other person.
Yeah.
That most of the time when one of us is enduring hardship, it's usually not at the hands of the other person.
Right.
It's more circumstances beyond.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we will just carve out time where it's like, you know, we had to spend 2 hours working on, like, our role as brothers today. And it's like, that means we didn't use that time to produce video or content, but it's also, like, that is essential to make sure that, like, both of us are in good, you know, like, sound minds to move forward.
Right.
And continue to handle the, you know, the load of all the stressors that we, you know, willingly place upon ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would, hopefully that answers the question.
Hopefully it does.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like that's some real talk.
That was definitely real talk,
from
sure.
From the bros.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, let's see.
So we'll try to find something lighter then.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Boy, howdy, where to begin? I remember graduating college and having aspirations of becoming an entrepreneur. I was brimming with ideas, a kitchen tool that made spiral cut hot dogs, or a phone case that uses a special retractable cables to wrap around any surface for selfies. I had no idea how to make these ideas a reality, and spoilers, I still don't. However, what I have learned through my various other endeavors is how to take products and make them available for purchases online, thanks to Shopify. Shopify is an e-commerce platform that makes designing your webpage, setting up your store, and making your first sales a breeze. But the best part is that after that first sale, Shopify scales with your growth, meaning it's perfect whether you're selling tens, hundreds, or even thousands of products monthly. And I am a data person, and boy does Shopify have data. Want to know how many hot dog spiralizers you sold between May 29th and July 5th? That's peak hot dog season. Boom, data in no time. Also, the answer is zero. I still don't know how to make a hot dog spiralizer, but if I did, I would know exactly how to sell them. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/poppop. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Fiji Water. Y'all, I have been having one heck of an amazing summer. Lake days on the boat have been some of the best of my life, and on those hot days, I love to keep Fiji Water on hand to keep my family and myself hydrated and refreshed. It really is from the islands of Fiji. Drop by drop, Fiji Water collects in a sustainable, ancient artesian aquifer 1,600 miles away from the nearest continent, protected and preserved naturally from external elements. And as the water filters through volcanic rock, it collects a unique profile of electrolytes and minerals, resulting in more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving Fiji Water its soft, smooth taste. And unlike some other premium bottled waters, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring, and this water even has a perfectly balanced pH of 7.7, and because I'm a complete aquarium nerd, I tested this with some of my pH test kits and can tell you, confirmed. Fiji Water really is Earth's finest water. So get stocked up on Fiji Water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water, it's Fiji Water. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Feather Snap. Y'all, I have officially reached the age where when it rains, I stand on my porch with my coffee mug in hand and declare, we really needed this. And with that, Alice and I have also taken to not only watching the many birds of our backyard, but also work to learn their specific bird calls. I kid you not, this very morning, Alice called me out to our porch to let me know, and I quote, "Aw, the morning doves are back." Which is why I'm so excited to tell you about the Feather Snap Scout Bird Feeder, which comes equipped with a top-of-the-line camera so you can grab images of all of your bird feeder customers and identify them thanks to expert-trained AI. It's so easy to set up and easy to use with built-in solar panels that means less recharging and more bird watching. The feeder pairs with a Feather Snap app that lets you organize your favorite pictures, and you can learn fun facts about hundreds of species and even earn badges for IDing new birds. Seriously, it is so fun, so be sure to check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com.
Let's see. This feels like a nice softball band, almost literally. This is from Ainsley. Just, what sports did you play in high school? Did you guys run track in high school? I know you did cross country, but if you did, what events did you run?
Oh boy, howdy. Yeah, we ran. That's for darn sure.
Oh, we were runners.
Yeah.
I mean, cross country, all the way. So when it started out, like, the part of why I wanted to do cross country is because when we were growing up, my mom, or our mom, always talked about how much she, or doing cross country and how much she loved it. And then when it finally, you know, I remember I was just, like, it wasn't like super duper 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 on my radar, but it was like one of those things that was like, yeah, I think I'll probably do cross country. Not, but then I wasn't like, you know, investigating how to do it like in ninth grade or anything. But I remember like I was just online and one of my friends was like, oh, cross country practice is starting. Did you mention that you were interested in doing it? And I was like, yeah, I guess so. And then it was like, now we're doing it.
Off to the races.
And off to the races, literally. So that started that. But part of why I wanted to do cross country was honestly to stay in shape for soccer, which was what I was more concerned about at the time. And that was like a spring sport. So I was like, I got to make sure I'm still really fit for that because, you know, that'll make me a better player. And, you know, running all year will be good for that. And then by like senior year, I was like, screw soccer, man. Running's where it's at.
Yeah.
So there was that. And then along with cross country, I didn't even know indoor track was a thing. But, you know, the coach was the same coach, and they're like, hey, you should do indoor track. And I was like, okay. So did cross-country and then indoor track. And cross-country is only one event, or at least where we were. I don't know if there's different distances elsewhere, but it's just the 5,000 meters.
Yes, yeah, 3.1 miles.
3.1 miles. And then in indoor, because we did distance in cross-country, we normally get pegged for, like, the middle distance things in track, or at least I did. So I would do the 1,000 a lot.
Yep.
Which is just the hardest distance in track, if you ask me.
No, it is. It is. Yeah. It's like, is it a sprint or is it long distance? And it's like, yes.
Yes. Yes, it is. It sure is those things.
It's basically run as hard as you can for 1,000 meters. And you're like, well, how's that different from running a 400, which is like less than half the distance? And it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
They both hurt. One just hurts longer.
They both hurt. So did that. And then I would also do long and triple and high jump as well. So those are my field events.
Yeah. Which you were quite good at.
I was pretty good at jumping. It was like one of those things. It was like one of those like little back pocket things that I always like felt like I knew about myself. I was like, I'm good. I like I'm good at jumping.
I'm good.
Like, hey, I don't want to brag, but I am. I can jump.
I can sort of do it. I know. Yeah. That was always a fun one.
Yeah.
That's always a fun one. Yeah. So yeah, and then I think because you did cross country and because we were close, when I was an eighth grader, I was like, well, I guess I'll just. Like, they would permit me to ride the middle school bus over to the high school to go and do cross country with y'all, which I was excited about.
Yeah.
I was the only eighth grader on the team.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Pretty good. Yeah.
But yeah, so then I had same thing. So yeah, cross country and then played JV soccer in ninth grade. And I think immediately I was like, I don't like this. No good. So yeah, we were just big time track people. I think the big thing for me though, was it was almost like, and whenever we've even like reviewed it, I'm like, I don't even know if I liked running. Like I never was committed to running the same way that I have been other sports in my life where like, I like look forward to getting out there and doing it,
yeah.
You know, being behind the wheel and like putting down the reps and everything. But then eventually I started doing sprinting for like one season of like outdoor track. And I actually did sort of love that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I remember there was one season of indoor where I did sprinting instead of like distance. And that was a whole different experience because like you're all of a sudden you're like, you're still going to like what feels like the same practice, but you're with a whole different group of people.
Yes.
Yeah. So during that period, I think I was doing like the 200 for indoor track.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think the big morsel or takeaway for me, though, was that it was good to be involved in a thing.
It was good to be involved in a thing.
Yeah.
Then I also did one season of a swim team in high school.
Did you only do one?
I only did one, yeah.
Interesting.
I did indoor my freshman year, swimming my sophomore year, and then indoor for did I do my senior year? I don't even know.
Okay.
Maybe I took off that one because I was like, I'm just tired of indoor track. Indoor track, it was like, it was hard for so many reasons, namely that despite it being called indoor track, the practice is still outside, but it's in the winter.
Yes.
And it's so cold. And then your weekends, there's not that many indoor tracks, so all of the meets are huge. And because the track is small, there's a bazillion heats for everything because the meets are huge. So there's like 30 schools and they got to do a bazillion heats, and because there's 30 schools you can't win anything.
Nope.
Like unless you are like the best person there,
right?
Yeah. So but that because there was a million heats and 30 schools, and then you had to get there to start the thing at like 7 o'clock and you were leaving at like 9 o'clock, so that's your whole Saturday. Hope you had fun lying on the bleachers and running two events.
I know. Yeah, you know? That half the time I felt like was the biggest problem with indoor track.
Yes.
You get there, and yeah, you're either laying on the bleachers or like a concrete floor.
Yeah.
And then at some point in time, being jolted up to go and run as fast as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just spent the last several hours laying on a hard surface. Was that really, like, the best thing for me to do?
Not the best,
yeah.
Yeah. So, indoor only. I can't wholly recommend it,
yeah,
lest you're really, really fast. But then for swimming, the event I was good at was the 100-meter breaststroke.
Nice.
That was my chosen event.
Right.
Yeah.
So
there you go. That's what sports we did.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Good question. Good question.
Bam.
Good trip down memory lane as well. Let's see what else we got here.
This sounds fun. Can we have 60 seconds of podcast time completely devoted to Ben being way too technical at aquariums? Then Jay gets 60 seconds to be way too technical about Pokemon EV training?
Oh my gosh.
That all begins now. That's from JP Wainick.
Okay, JP. So 60 seconds where Ben gets completely too technical about aquariums.
Okay.
Do we want to start like a timer? Do you want to hold it?
We got a little timer right
oh,
there.
Oh, we got a timer right there.
Hold it up if you want.
Yeah, hold me up a timer. Hold
okay.
me up a timer.
Here we go.
What's a good topic?
I mean, just like, how would you set up like a basic freshwater aquarium, you know?
Okay.
Or is that not too technical
That's
enough?
Not technical enough. I'm going to go into the economics of coral frag trading.
That sounds way more fun.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. All right. Okay, let me see. Let me get it up here.
Tell me when. Ready, go. All right, I got my hands rubbing together.
Ready, on your mark, get set, go.
Okay, probably the thing that I was most passionate about when it came to saltwater aquariums was the discovery of the fact that at very small capacities, you could buy something called a coral fragment, which basically on any type of coral, they have what are called eyes, but they're not really eyes so much as they are mouths.
Right.
The mouth is the way that they're able to like take food like phytoplankton from the water. And that's like the way in which the coral is both an animal in terms of like eating actual food versus like a plant, which is like using the light in order to continue to grow as well. It does need essential ingredients of both. The thing about it is that like inside of the hobby itself, you will end up getting these like very particular strains of corals that come in these like phenomenal colors.
Mm.
And they all end up getting like a really cool name. Like a bubblegum monster chalice, for example, is like a bright blue with a bright orange eye. And so if you bought a single eye for like $50 and it continued to grow into like 7 eyes, then you can quickly do the math and be like, okay, now this coral is worth $350, which you can then cut up into small little increments and trade with other hobbyists.
And time!
What do you think?
There you go.
Okay?
That was really good.
Okay,
really
thanks.
Good. All
thanks,
right,
thanks,
well
thanks.
Done. All right, here, do you want to hold it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. What is your topic? My brain started worrying.
They ask about Pokemon EV training.
Pokemon EV training.
Not the Pokemon EV. Pokemon effort value training.
Effort value
so
training.
The letter E, the letter V.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
On your mark, get set, go.
One of the most exciting things I ever learned about Pokemon was EV training, where I learned that when you catch a Pokemon and then it battles against the wild Pokemon, like, you get those little stats and stuff, but, like, when you level up, you see the stats, but you can actually control the stats a little bit more than you think, because every wild Pokemon you fight has what's called an effort value, and it's based on the different stats. So, like, if you fight a Zubat, that has 1 effort value for speed, and if you get 4 speed effort values, then that will translate to 1 full stat point when you level up.
Okay.
So there are 252 available effort values that any of the Pokemon can absorb from fighting opponent Pokemon.
Okay.
So you can only get up to, I think, 100 boosted stat points in any way in this way. But it means that if you're really careful about it, you can specifically train against certain Pokemon over and over and max out certain stats on your Pokemon, and it changes the way you play, like, the entire game.
Beautiful! Wow! Right on time, too. Look at you go. I had no idea that that's how that worked. So,
yeah.
Was this always the case, like, going back to, like, Red and Blue version?
Red and Blue, no. Red and Blue is static. Whatever you fight in the wild, that, like, you will level up the same way. Every Pokemon will level up the same way every time, as far as I'm concerned. Or as far as I know, I think you could use, like, the vitamins, like, the protein and the calcium to, like, boost it, or maybe get there a little bit faster or something like that. But henceforth, since then, it is like that. That is how it be. And so, like, if you're just going through the game the first time, like, it's almost not worth worrying about, because the Pokemon you catch to play the game with, you are forced to fight against all so many different kinds of Pokemon all the time.
Okay.
It's really more of, like, a post-game thing.
Okay.
Where you can have a lot more control over it, where you might say, like, okay, like, this Pokemon, you can, like, and this is where, like, they also introduce, like, natures, where, like, maybe your Pokemon is, like, a modest nature, and that means it gets, like, extra attack stats but less special defense stats or something.
Interesting.
So
Okay.
You would want to like breed to get your Pokemon to, so that it is maxing out in a good one and losing out on one that doesn't matter to it.
Okay.
You know, so like if you're just like a physical attacking Pokemon, then you want the nature that is high physical attack but gets like a downgrade on special attack because you won't be using any of those.
Interesting.
Right.
I can see where this would change the way you play the game.
Absolutely. I mean, it changes it a ton. And then, of course, at like the top end, people just sort of know, they'll just assume that like, okay, yes, that, you know, Tyranitar is maxed out on attack and speed because that's how all the Tyranitars are. And they'll always be this nature and they'll always, therefore, have this stat line. And then they can know, like, this attack will always land this much damage and stuff like that.
Dang.
So, things like that. And, you know, it gets insanely technical and all that at some point.
That's, like, for highly competitive play, like, player to player.
Like, yeah, like, if you were, like, competing in tournaments and stuff.
Wow.
And then, this is what makes it even trickier, is that at tournaments, it's, like, what is it? It's, like, open, not... If it was trading cards, they would say it was open deck list, which means you just get a copy of your opponent's deck to look at while you play against them.
Okay.
Yeah, which is not... At regular, at regional tournaments, it's closed deck list, so you don't know until you start playing. But at VGC, which is video game competition, you are handed a full stat sheet of your opponent's Pokemon ahead of time. So you know exactly what all their Pokemon have and their stats and their items and their abilities and all that. So.
Man, so I know we were only supposed to permit you 1 minute. I had questions, so I needed more.
Yeah,
so that was fascinating. That was fascinating. That's the pieces of the game that I feel like I've left behind because I haven't really properly done a playthrough since Yellow version.
And if you're just playing through, it doesn't matter. You could have a nature that makes your Pokemon actively worse, and you'll still just thump the computer.
Okay.
You know. Whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are no competition.
Not really any competition. Yeah.
So what you're basically saying is that it's not that big of a deal to beat the game.
It's not that big of a deal to beat the game. There are maybe certain parts of the game where it's like, okay, this is the battle tower, and we have made these Pokemon like extra hard, genuinely competitive. But, you know, for like beating the Elite Four, as long as you're playing type advantages and being smart about it, you're probably pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I like it. I like it.
There you go.
All right, next question.
Next question. Let's see. Dola and Chase say, do you have any Bluey theories or hopes for the next season?
Oh man,
you guys.
Yeah, just playing right into your hand.
I know. Let's see. Do I have any theories for Bluey? So obviously, the big theory, and we can probably make a video about this at some point, but is who is the father of Bluey's child?
Okay, so
that's the big one.
We've glimpsed Bluey as a mother.
As a mother, yes, we have.
Okay.
So they did a really cool thing in the end of season 3. The 49th episode is called The Sign.
Okay.
And that's like the big, super emotional 30-minute special that everyone was like, oh my god, it's so good. And they did it as like the 49th episode, even though the other episodes have had, other seasons have had 50 episodes. So you're sort of like, okay, well, it's the special, so they probably just like two-partered it, whatever.
Right.
And then, unbeknownst, like a week later, they just dropped episode 50 called The Surprise, which was also a surprise release, which was very fun.
That's very meta.
In and of itself.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my god, no way! Are you serious?
Go creators of Bluey.
Go creators of Bluey. They can do almost no wrong, it seems like. And in that episode, you see Bluey asking, you know, will I ever be a mom? And she's like, well, if you want to... or whatever, and then, you know, Bluey and Minyo are playing very differently from each other, and then by the end of the episode, it, like, fast forwards in time, and the dad is opening the door, and adult Bluey comes in, and then the grandchild is, like, hiding outside the door playing the same game Bluey was when she was a kid. So you're like, oh, man, and that's when you see the kid, but you don't know who the dad is, and it is, like, they give you, like, 10 frames of this kid, you know?
Uh-huh.
And you're like, who, like... Like, it's enough to go off of, but it is dividing in terms of who you think the dad is.
Are there, like, two top candidates?
There are, like, two top candidates, yes.
Okay.
So, you've got, it's either Mackenzie or Jean-Luc.
Okay.
These are the two characters in Bluey's life that it seems the most likely it would be. Jean-Luc has appeared in... one episode.
Wow.
And it is called Camping, and the healers are out camping, and they meet Jean-Luc's family, and they are from Canada, so they don't speak English.
Okay.
They speak French, and the entire time, it's like showing you how, despite the language barrier, it does not stop Bluey or Jean-Luc from playing with each other the whole time. It's very adorable, and the episode, in the episode, they plant an acorn, and then the episode ends with Bluey sitting under the tree, having grown up, and Jean-Luc comes back. So, you know he comes back and still remembers her.
Wow.
God, I know, that's making me so emotional about the show.
I know. This happens every time we talk about Bluey.
It's like not that big a deal. It's just like so well done. So, you don't see Jean-Luc but once, but the only other time, in the one episode he shows up as a kid, and then like, and then shows up to teenage Bluey, or whatever.
Okay.
And like, you can see the thing they made together, so that's cool. But then there's Mackenzie, who is more of a recurring character, and it would seem more like it should be Mackenzie, because Mackenzie's a recurring character.
Sure.
Yeah.
It would be less of like, you know, if you're like, oh, Jean-Luc, and you're like, if you haven't seen the camping episode,
right.
It's kind of like...
You'd be like, who's that?
Who's... Okay. You know?
Right.
But, and maybe it's like one of those things like where then you go back and you watch it and you're like...
You say that. Okay. Here's the thing. That's what I would have thought at first too. Where you're like, he's only one episode and Mackenzie's like in a bunch of episodes.
Right.
So, and not only that, Mackenzie's in episodes where it's like, you know, they're at school one day and they have like, you know, the fifth graders come to hang out with them or whatever, and they've all got like a buddy. And, like, Mackenzie's buddy and Bluey's buddies clearly like each other, and they keep wanting to hang out, and the two of them are like, ugh, why do you want to hang out with her, you know?
Sure.
So, that's adorable, but it's supposed to be, like, clearly Mackenzie and Bluey also like each other.
Okay.
And they're just, you know, being fussy with each other in the exact same way, and stuff like that. And anytime they're on screen together, they'll, like, always disagree with each other all the time.
Uh-huh.
And, like, in, like, a way that's sort of like, oh, we really like each other, but we disagree a lot. It's like... It's there.
Yeah.
It's very present.
Yeah, there's that classic like thin line between love and hate that I feel like is never more present than during like that like those cusp years between when dating is not like even remotely a thing.
Yeah.
And when it starts to be a thing, and it's like these two people like each other and they don't know what to do with those feelings. And so what you end up with is this like wacky sort of like trading punches, halfway flirtatious, halfway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's very much that. That's what they're doing. But then the Bluey's child ears has one pointy ear and one like floppy ear.
Okay.
And so then you've got like, I can't remember exactly how it breaks down, but like Bluey has two pointy ears. One of the boys has a single floppy ear, and one of the boys has two floppy ears.
Okay.
So it's sort of like, well, the kid has one floppy ear, so it's like, oh, so does that mean it's like...
Like
50-50?
Yeah,
because then it works both ways. It's like, well, if it's with the two floppy ears, then it's 50-50. Or if it's with the one, it's the same. Crap.
It's like somehow
it doesn't help.
It's also 50-50.
It's also 50-50.
Yeah.
And so, you'd think Mackenzie, because Mackenzie's just a much more recurring character, except there's another episode called Fairy Tale... where the dad is telling Bingo and Bluey a bedtime story about when he was a kid and how he got, like, jinxed by his brothers and he couldn't talk. And eventually, at the end of the episode, he is saved from the jinx by this beautiful girl he saw at the camp who he says was Chili, who's now his wife.
Okay.
So, the thought is that even though Chili... doesn't remember that. She says she did go to the camp, but she doesn't remember seeing Bandit there. But it's like, they met once as kids.
I see. And then they got together as adults.
Right.
Wow.
At camp. So. I don't know. Gosh. Ugh. The show, man.
I know. I mean, it's... Do you think there's any chance, like, I know that your whole life, TV shows have been something that have, like, resonated with you in a way that is, like, clearly deeper than the average person.
Sure.
Like, I think that this is, like, you know, we said, I think, in, like, a week, like, an episode a couple weeks ago, your love language is, like, coffee.
Yeah.
Like, there's a piece of me that almost feels like you've heavily associated aspects and moments of your life with various TV shows, and they've, like... they've almost been this thing that I think, like, gives you, like, a kind of strength. Like, do you feel like there's any way that, like, Bluey and sort of like the way that the characters are depicted, the way like Bandit in particular as like a father is, like, is this like, and it's something that you and your family seem to like share in a very big way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost impossible for me to imagine a world where like Bluey is not like that. It's not going to leave a lasting mark on who you are as a person for always.
I mean, it feels like it probably will, because I don't think it's going anywhere. You know, it's like so successful.
But even if it did, I don't think it would matter, because this is you. Like,
yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, I'm going to remember it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
no
doubt. It's like woven into the fabric of like your personality's DNA.
Oh, I know. It does feel like that sometimes. And it's like, it is, it's baffling to me sometimes. You're right. It's like, it's just like it feels like just a kid's show, but like, I don't know. It gets to me.
But it's clearly not.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's clearly like, not. It's like also like adults enjoy it everywhere.
Right.
You know, it's like, I'm feeling this way, but like there's a bazillion TikToks where it's like, how it goes, like, I can't tell you, I've seen the exact same TikTok made a million times, where it's like, what it's like being a parent watching Bluey with your kids, and it's always the same TikTok, where it's like, what's that you're watching? Huh, that's a funny looking show, and then they're watching it with the kids, and then the kids are like, you know, off playing, and the parents are still there, and then it's like, are the kids asleep? Let's turn on Bluey, you know?
Yeah,
this is like that, like, you can make that TikTok right now, and there you go, you're welcome. For the views.
Yeah. People are going to be like, yeah.
People are like, that is what it's like.
Yes. Very
yeah.
relatable.
Very relatable show. Yeah.
But, so. And that in and of itself. I mean, it's really funny because, like, I have seen episodes of Bluey, like, when we've been on, like, travel and stuff, like, with your family especially. And so, like, I know the characters. I know the ins and outs, kind of, like, the tone and everything of the show. And it has made me cry before myself. But, It's funny to me how the way that you just described this potential theory as like who Bluey's future partner could be, like, I'm like invested.
Yeah.
So like, it's like, this is not like one of those moments where it's like, we're going like deep into the archives of something. I'm sort of like, it's gotta be Sean Luke.
You think it's gonna be Sean Luke?
I think it's gonna be Sean Luke. I'm like, the acorn thing is too good.
The acorn
like,
thing is so good.
Yeah
like bring it back.
They
the
like,
camp story from the parents. Yeah.
They grew something together. Like,
exactly.
That's like what having a child is you are
mm-hmm.
you are putting in
mm-hmm.
both of yourselves to,
yeah.
you know, yeah.
And yeah, then there's like the color palette of the child, which is like, you know, he's got like a patch on his eye or whatever, and it's like the same color as Jean Luke, and then it's like Mackenzie has the same breakdown and stuff. So it's like, they know exactly what they're doing. And I feel like what's going to happen is that this is going to be like the mystery that surrounds the future of the show.
Sure.
Like, you will continuously get shots of them from the future, and they will withhold the answer forever. You know, like, not forever, but
like you think they'll tell us eventually.
I think you'll know eventually.
Yeah.
But I think like, for now, they are going to, like, this could even just maybe be, like, a whole season 4 thing. It's like, who is it? And maybe they just keep giving you snippets or whatever.
You know, and this is kind of cool because it's, like, it sort of reminds me a little bit. I know we've kind of detoured from answering our questions here. But, like, it almost makes me feel, and this is going to sound, like, blasphemy to say out loud, but, like, a better executed potential, like, How I Met Your Mother. Like, where...
It is. You're right.
Yeah. Like, because there's that whole big question is, like, who is the mother? And, you know, I think when you're making a sitcom, and especially like pre the era where hyper speculation was occurring, and it was sort of like a network TV show with your classic like 20 plus episodes per season, and you don't know whether or not you're going to get like picked up for like the next season. So you like, you never really know, like, do we finish it with like, this is the mom. Like, you know, this person turned out to be them. And it's like, well, we just got picked up for season 4, so now we can't have them be the mom. Because,
right,
because, you know,
the premise of the show is defeated.
The premise of the show. Like, you need to
yeah.
always be wondering, like, could this be it? Like, you know, you need that element in order to keep the ball moving forward. But, you know, if you were to go back and know that you were going to make how many seasons are there?
3.
Okay.
Oh, of How Much Your Mother?
Yeah.
9.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So, if you know it's going to be 9 seasons, and what you're able to do is, like, sprinkle all throughout, like a woman who never gets proper screen time, is never super important, but is, like, always the person who, like, you know, Ted's fumbling with his umbrella, and she's the one who, like, grabs his arm. And we don't really catch a sight of who that person is, just the actual actress who the answer to the question is there for each of these moments. And, like, you may quietly be picking up on the fact that the same person has appeared here and there and here and there and here and there.
Yeah.
But, like, you may also not have noticed that. And then once the reveal has happened and you go through and you're like, that was her. No. At the hot dog stand, too, and at the swimming pool, and at the party. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it would be so amazing if you went through and you just saw, there it is, there it is, there it is, there it is. You know, so I feel like Bluey has the opportunity to do that, but better.
Yeah. So, I think in the show How I Met Your Father, they went for an approach a little closer to that.
Okay.
Where, they lay out in the opening episode where the mom is telling the kids, like, you know, how about your father or whatever, and she's like, and I met him that night, and, like, that's in the pilot. But then, on that night, she meets, like, six men.
Okay, so
it's one of these men.
Okay.
And it's sort of like, which one's it going to be? Go. You know, then it's sort of like, maybe. I don't know, you know.
Yes, that is so interesting. And although hilariously, the thing my mind first goes to is each of the actors who were called in to play a role in the pilot for a new show, like, there is that aspect as, like, a young actor in their career, not knowing, like, if this could be your big break or not.
Yeah.
So where my mind immediately goes is empathizing with the other five people who, like, no, none of them know whether or not they'll be the one.
Right.
But if they are, it could be very big for them getting, like, screen time, recognition.
Right.
A momentous moment attached to a franchise of some kind.
Yeah.
You know? And then everybody else, it's like, yeah, we just need you for that first episode.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It was, like, you got called in once.
Yeah, called in. So.
And maybe then for the rest of your life, you could tell your friends, like, I was one of those.
I was one of those. Right.
Could have been me.
Could have been me.
It wasn't, but, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, would you like fries with that? See what I did there?
Yeah.
They were like working at, like, a drive through or something.
Right.
Because they're a big break.
Probably if you were one of the six people, though, you'd have had, like, a plot line at some point.
Probably.
You'd have been like, you know, all six of these people are going to be red hair, or five of them will be red herrings for the show.
Right. That's a good point. So maybe it's a big break for all of them.
Right.
Good for them. I'm just happy for them.
You know, How I Met Your Father is a show that will go on. For it's canceled.
So. Oh, no.
I know.
That's too bad. They almost had it.
They did.
Man, well, what an episode, Jay.
I know.
That we just had.
Emotional. Surprisingly.
Yeah.
You know, we had a couple of emotional points in this one, didn't we?
We did.
Goodness me.
It's been quite the roller coaster.
Which
I did not expect, because we're in the phase of tour prep where we're like, okay, we need to have some things recorded, filmed. And usually the thing that is so challenging about the pop is that we need to have lived life in between the episodes, because that is what is informing each of our
next episodes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to go and record them in advance. And so it's like, okay, we've done a couple of these, like, these advice columns before. Like, this is a good way to have, like, you know, some good prompts from the, you know, from the little kernels at home, to give us some jumping off points, you know, so then we can maybe deep further back into the archives, find some answers to questions we've never answered in the past. But yeah, so never when we sat down today did I think that we would be navigating the waters that we navigated.
No,
today.
I certainly didn't either. And honestly, I picked the Bluey one. I was like, this is going to be such an easy one to answer. I did not think I was, like, I picked it. I did not think I was going to react that way.
I know. That's amazing to see, though.
Yeah.
And I do love that, because, I mean, again, I know it's like, you know, I said it before, but it has been the case for you. And I've mentioned this in previous episodes. Like, a lot of the stuff that you found as a kid, you've hung on to into adulthood.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I've even thought before, like, I was thinking about this the other day, like, you know, what we do now is, like, we write, you know, theories for YouTube.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, sometimes I'll look back and think, like, was I barreling towards this in a way that, like, I'd never realized? I started doing YouTube in college. I certainly didn't talk about, like, theories or anything. But, like, when we started YouTube, like, we didn't even do fan theory stuff or fandom stuff at all. We just did, like, you know, the talk to each other stuff. But eventually we landed here. But I was thinking about it. I was like, I remember back in college, like we would watch the show Heroes, and I would, like, we would have so many theories about it.
We did, yeah.
Like, what's going to happen? Is this person going to show up? How's it going to get resolved? And, like, sadly, that show just went, like, right off a cliff.
It did.
But, like, the first couple seasons were, like, so good. And I would just, like, I mean, I would just be, like, looking at, like, forums and, like, I, like, stuff like that. Just, I was, like, so deep on it. And, you know, it didn't really ever amount to anything. But it was, like, I was, like, but that was the same thing. But, like, I was doing it, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, there is... I would say yes. Like, I think that you've always sort of, like, you know, even in Name of the Wind, they, like, introduce this concept of, like, a knack being, like, you know, in the story, it's almost this, like, magical ability. So the example they give is that there's somebody in the troop who is capable of always rolling sevens with dice.
Yeah.
And so for the purposes of the example, basically what a knack means is that, like, you can successfully always roll sevens. Like, it's not by chance, it's not by cheating, it's just, like, that is what you were capable of doing. And then they talk about it in, like, a variety of other capacities, like, where people just have, like a natural-born affinity and ability in a given field. And I do feel like when it's come to, like, these fictional characters, like you especially, have a knack. Like, it is an uncanny ability to remember small details about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you get, you know, like, invested in these various worlds and get lost in them, which is, you know, I think partly like what fills in a lot of the blanks and provides so much, like, you know, color to it is what we do. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it really is interesting to me with the Bluey thing, because I'm like, it's so much of everything we cover came from so long back. You know, it's like,
right,
we've always had the nostalgia because it's always been tied to our childhood. It's all stood the test of time. You know, like, all of that stuff always adds up to, like, a course. But then it's odd to think that you could currently be experiencing that same thing.
Yeah.
Like,
in
real time. As, like, you know, in relation to being, like, a father to young children.
Right.
Or just a parent at all.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think it's cool.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
Oh, well. Thanks.
Couldn't do it without you. Anyway, guys, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. If you have any feedback for the episode, you can send it on over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or if you would like to support the show, you can do so by heading on over to patreon.com/popcornculture. We, of course, closing out at the end of September, have that new Pop Pop Puff Puff sweater for the quarterly merch tier, which is going to be like a forest green cozy crew neck sweater, and then, like, in raised bubble fonty letters.
Kind of like the shirt I'm wearing.
It is kind of like the shirt you're wearing right now.
Yeah.
People can see you.
You can see it.
And it's going to say, pop, pop.
Yeah, instead of having Baymax on it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's going to be gorgeous and cozy and perfect for the fall weather that I feel like is already hitting the Roanoke area. So again, patreon.com/popcornculture. But otherwise, until next time.
Bop, bop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.